in our arms on Independence Day.
That's Joan Baez singing the words of her former lover, Bob Dylan. William Hazelgrove and I have chatted on the radio a number of times, most recently about Edith Wilson, the remarkable wife of Woodrow Wilson, who actually became kind of the president of the United States when her husband was felled by a very severe stroke. And when he was on, he was telling me about this. His next book, not only is he a great guy, he's prolific, too. He told me about it. I've got a book about Teddy Roosevelt. And I'm saying, okay, well, you know, what else is there? You know, he was a president. And the literature of any president, Bill, as you well know, fills bookshelves.
Right.
This one, however, takes a very specific look at the title is Forging a President. The subtitle is How the Wild West Created Teddy Roosevelt. I found this utterly compelling. Yes, because the image of Teddy Roosevelt is rough rider, tough guy.
Right.
That is hard. He's a self-made tough guy. Created. Yeah. He was a... Describe Teddy Roosevelt as a young man, a child young man.
Sickly, asthmatic, horrible digestive problems. We would call it Crohn's disease today. Couldn't sleep. Suffer from melancholia, which we would call depression today. The doctors didn't think he would make it to adulthood. And, you know, as we were discussing before, what his father would do was literally take him out in Manhattan, have him hang off the side of the carriage, and then ride like the wind and force air into his lungs. You know, they didn't have any inhalers. They had no antispasmodics to open him up. He'd give him coffee, whiskey, cocaine, anything he could get his hands on to stop these spasms. And none of it really helped him.
Well, as you write in here, I mean, the truth is that Teddy Roosevelt became what he was not, a cowboy through sheer will. When he first came out west, he was a sickly, as you just said, weak young man who suffered so much from asthma that when he was a boy, and this is such a vivid image, his father would take him on fast buggy rides just to force air into his lungs. There's a certain desperation in that act.
Oh, yeah.
A certain desperation there. When did he first go out west?
Okay, so in 1883, life's gotten really good for Teddy. He's an assemblyman in Albany. All of a sudden, he gets a telegram. His wife's having a baby. Says, everything's great. He gets a second telegram saying, come home immediately. Your wife is gravely ill. He goes home. There's this horrible fog. Takes him a long time to get back to Manhattan. He gets back there. Not only is his wife gravely ill, his mother. So his wife is dying from Bright's disease, his mother from typhoid fever. They die on the same day in 1883. Teddy Roosevelt puts an X there in his diary. Says, the light has gone out of my life. 3 months later, he goes west. I'm talking west to the Dakota Territories. It's 1883. The frontier will be closed in 1890. This is still the Wild West. Geronimo's out there. Billy the Kid was just killed 2 years before. And he goes without a return date.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's chapter three, and that is such a haunting, haunting title for The Day the Light Went Out.
Right.
He had no plans to come back, did he?
No, he really was devastated, and you know...
Well, understandably.
Right, exactly. I mean, people were afraid for his sanity, and, you know, a lot of historians have sort of skipped over this part of his life and sort of gone to the vigorous Teddy Roosevelt right away. But this is not who went out west. Who went out west was a severely distraught young man who was weak, asthmatic, and going to an alien place.
He wore glasses. He was four eyes. He was bullied.
Exactly. The whole
notion. What amazes me, Bill, and you always wind up sort of finding these great historical tracks that others have ignored for some reason.
Right.
This is as compelling a story about Teddy Roosevelt as San Juan Hill.
Absolutely.
Bull Moose Party and everything else.
Absolutely, because it's my thesis, and you know, we'll go to the title, Forging a President. It's my thesis that the West created Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was created out there in the Badlands. We'll talk about what the Badlands were about, but he was created in the Badlands in the 3 years he was out there. And he came back with that West in him, that swagger, and it meshed the country in the early 20th century, became the American century. And that's really who Teddy Roosevelt is. And so he really is that cowboy.
But there's also in him, and you do a great job of sort of getting at it, there is a, It's not resilience, but there is a... He's questing.
Yes.
He is seeking.
Existential journey. Yep. Absolutely. He goes out into the balance. What's the first thing he does? He goes to the balance, which... We'll talk about the balance. Negative 40 in the winter, 120 in the summer.
And he's fascinated by that.
It mirrors his insides. There's lignite fires, which are basically sulfur fires burning out there, okay? So when you get there, you see these huge geologic contortions with these fires burning, you know, in the twilight. This appeals to him. You know, Custer called it hell with the fires out. He hated it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else would hate this place. Teddy Roosevelt loves it. He loves it because it mirrors what's going on inside him. And you're right. This is very existential for him.
He has some money. I mean, he is not... He ain't broke.
Right, exactly. Which allows him, and people rightly point this out, allows him to do these things. He does go west. Now, fair enough. And when the frontier... We don't have a frontier, but the frontier allowed people in the east, when their life disintegrated, to go west and recreate themselves. We can't do that as much now, but people would go and become somebody else, which... Teddy Roosevelt uses the West to do. He was also able, though, to plunk down $14,000 on a log, give it to two guys to get into the cattle business,
yeah,
which he does. And, of course, in that famous scene, he gives them the money, and which is about $100,000 today, and they say, do you need a receipt? He says, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, he had money. And, by the way, he was a terrible businessman. We'll get to that in a little bit, too. But, yes, he jumps into the cattle business. He has no idea what he's doing. Considered Four Eyes. His buckskin coat is from Brooks Brothers.
Yeah.
They think he's a joke. They think he's a fop from the East, a dude. They call him this dude. And, of course, what's the first thing that happens to him? He's out looking for horses. Five Indians ride up on him with Winchesters over the head. Teddy Roosevelt drops down, takes out his Winchester, puts it across the pommel of his saddle, and faces him down. They come up and say, no, no, we're friendly. He says, stay right there. Then they curse at him. He says, well, I knew they knew English then.
Yeah.
And then he backs him off and he gets back. But, you know, again, this is this little guy who's doing this. And you wonder, where does this grit come from? Where does this come from?
Do you think in some way he went out there, because he seems courageous beyond all reason.
Yes.
Do you think there's any sort of death wish kind of thing going on there?
Yes.
I'm sorry to ask such a deep question. I'm so incredibly taken with this
story.
Well,
because you read it, and so you know all the things that happened to him.
Yeah.
It would have killed anybody else. And I started to believe in destiny because he is obviously destined for something greater because he didn't die.
Exactly.
But I think he did do that. He had a very interesting thing he said. He said, black care rarely sits close to the rider who rides fast enough. Well, what's that mean? It means if you're doing extreme things and going as fast as you can, then this melancholia, this horrible grief will not bother you. And Teddy, in his whole life, would do this. After terrible tragedy, he'd go do some incredibly excruciating physical thing that would almost kill him.
Like the shooting.
Like the shooting.
Talk about that for a second.
Okay, right, exactly. Okay, so he goes into, he's out again looking for horses. He goes to a town called Mingusville. And Mingusville, this is dirty little western town, goes down to look for a place to sleep. He goes in, of course, there's a bad guy in there shooting up the place. And Teddy goes and sits behind the stove, thinking he'll let it pass. The guy comes over, stands over him and says, Four Eyes is buying for the house. Teddy Roosevelt ignores him. He said, I said Four Eyes is buying for the house. Teddy Roosevelt says, okay, if I must, I must. Gets up, cold cocks him right, left, knocks the guy out. His stock starts to rise in the West. His legend. People start to say, well, maybe this isn't just some foppy guy from the East. Maybe there's some grit in this man. And in the West, you're as good as your word.
Yeah. And wow, that's the chapter, The Newly Minted Cowboy. We are talking with William Hazelgrim about his latest book, Forging a President, How the Wild West Created Teddy Roosevelt. Fascinating story. We got to take a commercial break and come back. I want to read one thing before, just to your point about how he confronted everything. When he died, Mr. Roosevelt, on January 6, 1919, after a blood clot moved into his lungs at 60, Woodrow Wilson's vice president, who was a very strange guy,
yes,
as you have taught me,
yes,
Grove, said this, summed up Roosevelt's death this way, quote, death had to take Roosevelt sleeping. If he had been awake, there would have been a fight. That's a great quote. We'll be right back.
Cafe with a friend of mine.
Joan Baez and Bob Dylan, there's a team. And William Hazelgrove and Teddy Roosevelt is another team. Bill's written Forging the President, How the Wild West Created Teddy Roosevelt. It is an adventure tale.
It is.
Pure and simple, Bill. It's an adventure tale. How did you come upon this? I mean, I know you've done, you've been, you know, researching a number of books. How did this grab you so?
I was reading Edmund Morris's trilogy on Teddy Roosevelt, and I stumbled on the part where his wife and mother died. I thought, my God, what a tragedy. And then the parts where, you know, he was so sickly. And then he goes west. And I thought, well, here it is. Here's the redemption story. Here's what created Teddy Roosevelt. You know, and when I write something, I'm thesis-driven, you know, first sure. woman president. So to me, it was like, well, this is what created Teddy Roosevelt. You know, this is what created this incredible, vigorous, swaggering cowboy who, by the way, when he did become president, they said, oh, my God, that cowboy's now president.
Yeah.
And they were right.
Yeah.
You know, he would go swim in the Potomac every day, ride his horse in. But so that's what made me say, I'm going to hone in on this because I want to know what happened out there in those 3 years in the Badlands that created Teddy Roosevelt.
What surprised you about your research?
Two things. One is that he was so sick that they said his cowhand said that you could span his waist with your two hands sometimes because of the Crohn's disease he had. He had a horrible Crohn's disease. And then the second thing would be the things that would have killed anybody else. You know, he was on a roundup, and a roundup is basically where you're trying to pull on the cattle. Well, the cattle stampeded at night. So Teddy Roosevelt jumps on his horse. He's riding full out. And this is very treacherous because there's gullies and cliffs.
Oh, yeah.
And everything. Well, he goes right off a cliff with his horse down into the Little Missouri River. The horse flips over. Teddy Roosevelt falls off. They both land in the river. The horse lands next to him, which, you know, again, would have killed him if it fallen on him. But most people would say, okay, I've had enough. Teddy Roosevelt gets back on the horse and continues on the roundup for 16 hours. Again, this is a guy who's destined for something greater, that, you know, because he did not get killed out.
I'll give you an alternative theory. He's destined for something greater, or he's really mentally disturbed.
Yes. Well, you know, you bring that up. But some people thought Roosevelt was crazy. When his first wife, Alice, would not marry him at Harvard, he went into the woods at night and wouldn't come out. He would take walks, long walks, and wouldn't come out. Finally, a family friend came up to see him and said, you've got to stop this. You know, this is getting really bad. And he also ordered dueling pistols in case somebody else tried to take her from him. So Teddy Roosevelt had a different side to him, let's say. You know, and it was a bit murderous. You know, he was a killer of animals. And then later, of course, when San Juan Hill and Charge That Hill, he proved he could kill humans pretty well, too.
But his... I love the title of this book, Forging, because it implies the strength of forged metal.
Right.
He came out of the West, out of this portion of the West, as a great admirer of the West for a number of things, such as...
Right. Well, for the fact that you would have to be self-reliant. And, you know, he really came to know the common man. He was from a patrician family.
Oh, my God, absolutely.
But everybody called him Mr. Roosevelt, even though there were men twice his age, okay? But he started to, you know, he started to garner the respect of these men, and he respected these men. He respected the cowboy because he was self-reliant, and their word was their word. You know, there's a scene where this cowboy is branding this cattle, and Roosevelt said, why are you putting my brand on that cattle? And he goes... well, boss, I know my job. And he said, but that's Lang's cattle. That's the other outfit. And the cowboy says, I know. And Roosevelt says, get your stuff and get out. If you'll steal from him, you'll steal from me. So he had this iron sort of line in the sand, which also is when he became a sheriff, an unofficial sheriff.
Right.
He gets
his
boat gets stolen on the Little Missouri River. Most people would say, my boat got stolen. Roosevelt builds a boat in the winter, goes down after these guys 3 days, chasing them. With some Tolstoy, of course, to read along the way, catches them, gets a drop on them, then takes them 7 days to a sheriff, gets $35 for bringing them in.
Yeah, it's an astonishing thing. I can see why you got hooked on this, and I also sense your excitement even now. It's a very exciting read.
Yeah, it is,
because it reads like a movie.
I wrote, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about my method on some of these books. You know, as you know, I wrote 10 novels before.
Sure.
So what I do is I bring scenes to the history where I recreate them, And so it's experiential history, because I believe you have to experience, and at the end you're going to say to yourself, wow, this Wes did or did not create him. I'm not going to tell you that. You're going to go through all these experiences saying that he is Wilson. You'll get to the end and say, well, she was or was not the president. But I'm going to let you make that decision.
Right.
The journey, not the destination.
Yeah, I think she was the president.
Absolutely.
That book was a stunner, too. How did this whole Western adventure further inform Roosevelt the politician?
Ah, great question. Well, here's a great scene with Teddy. I have to tell this one. 1912, he's running against Wilson, starts the Bull Moose Party, splits off from Republicans. He's in Milwaukee to give a speech. A guy named Charles Schrank comes up on him, shoots him in the chest.
This is an amazing story.
Right.
Listen to this closely, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Shoots him in the chest. The bullet goes through his glasses case and his folded speech, lodges in his rib. Roosevelt takes out his handkerchief, checks his mouth to see if his lungs are bleeding. They aren't. And the people around him say, you've got to go to the hospital. He says, absolutely not. I came to give a speech. I'm going to go give a speech. Speaks for 90 minutes in Milwaukee. Then he gets from there, changes his shirt, gets on a train to Chicago, and sleeps like a baby the whole way, and in the morning goes to the hospital where they go, we can't take this bullet out, you're going to have it for the rest of your life.
That is an amazing,
and of course, he hit the famous quote, he said, it takes more than a bullet to stop a bull moose.
Yeah.
But that man, and, you know, and as you know, I lead off in the book with that scene, because it's my contention, that man who stood up there for 90 minutes was born in the West.
What are you working on now?
I actually have a book coming out.
this is why I love Ben. Bill, but not only is he, it's very hard, ladies and gentlemen, in this publishing environment to continue to publish, because the publishing environment these days is wicked, nasty, brutal, mean, unrelenting.
Venal.
Yeah, venal. Yes, every bad word you could think of. But Bill, I think the reason you are able to write nonfiction books as compelling as you are is you're a novelist.
Absolutely. And so
you don't get bogged down. And now, you want it. You're a storyteller.
I'm a storyteller. And, you know, when I go through all the secondary sources and the primary sources, I'm looking for those stories, because that tells the tale.
Yep.
That tells the tale. You know, I don't mind dry history, but it doesn't work in telling a dramatic tale. So anyway, the book that will be out in the fall.
This
fall.
Good Lord.
I know. It's ridiculous. I'm an anomaly. It's something strange. But you know what? I've been doing this my whole life. So it's like, you know, and honestly, writing narrative nonfiction is easier for me than writing fiction. I don't have to create the whole thing. The story's there.
Yeah.
Al Capone in the 1933 World's Fair is basically the one coming out in the fall. And it's basically how the Chicago, through an organization called the Secret Six, not Elliot Ness, got rid of Capone because they needed to get rid of him for this 33 fair that occurred in the worst year of the Great Depression.
See, that's a story. How'd you find that story?
I was snooping around, reading about Al Capone, and I loved Devil in the White City.
Yeah, sure.
And then all of a sudden I realized, oh my God, they did it again 40 years later. And that's how I start the book, 40 years later. And so 40 years later, they do the exact same thing, except this time it's called A Century of Progress, and Chicago is broke. Chicago has no money, and people are like, you're crazy to put on this fair. You're absolutely crazy. Also, you just had the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. They're like, nobody's going to come to a fair here. Everybody thinks people are running with the Thompsons, and they were right. So the big guns in Chicago got together and formed called the Secret Six. They were six Chicago millionaires who got together and funded a secret police force to get rid of Capone, and they did.
It's a great story.
It is.
That's a great story.
And I tell the story of building this fair that's incredible. It was like another city on the lakefront.
That's an amazing thing. That is an underreported fair.
Very underreported.
The Century of Progress. Why do you think? I guess because the Columbian Exposition just overshadows everything.
Yeah, that was so big. And also it was during the Great Depression.
Right.
But it was this amazing success. And it was all privately funded. Every bit of it. None of it came from the government because nobody had any money.
Yeah.
So the $200 million they needed to get off the ground, they funded it here
in
Chicago.
Isn't that where Mike Todd, the famous, you haven't finished the book, but I think that's where Mike Todd met Gypsy Rose Lee.
That's right. And, you know, of course, one of the other central characters is Sally Rand.
Sally Rand and her fan dance.
Who rides into the fair on the first night on a horse naked. So,
Lady Godiva.
You gotta love it.
Lady Godiva. Bill, you love your life, don't you?
Yes. Well, you know.
All right. We've been talking about Bill's latest book, and in the fall we'll talk about his next book. Forging a President, How the Wild West Created Teddy Roosevelt. It is really a grand, grand adventure tale. And it tells you more about, well, it's a real American story, too.
It is. Redemption. We love people who fall off the horse, not to overuse an analogy, but who fall off the horse and get back on and go, I'm going to gallop this way and keep going. And that's Teddy. And Teddy would often quote, you know, he said two interesting things. He said, the romance of my life began here when going to the Badlands. And he said, I could have never been president if I hadn't gone to the Badlands and gone west. So, you know, he really kept reinventing himself that way. He went out there and reinvented himself, but he kept going on. And he also had another quote where he said, I'm for the man in the ring. I'm not for the man on the sidelines. I'm for the man that throws his hat in the ring, win or lose.
He's a remarkable character. William Hazelgrove is the author. Bill's got a nice website, William Hazelgrove. That's William, and then HAZELGROVE.com. You can get all of his books. Another one coming out in the fall, and he will be here.
Absolutely.
To talk about it, Bill. It's always great to see you, and congratulations again. You know, your last one was great. This one's great. You've got a niche here, and I think this next one about Al Capone and the Century of Progress sounds fantastic.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. That's, as you said, is undertold.
Yeah, you find them. You're you look at history with a novelist's eye,
and I do.
You come back with that story. So, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Keeping writing, Lise Graham. Thanks for being the greatest producer in the world. Adam Phillips, thanks for being the greatest engineer I've ever known in my life. You people, the greatest audience ever. Goes without saying.